I remember the scene 4 years ago very vividly. I was enjoying the rest and rejuvenation of a minister's retreat when I got a call on my cell phone from the president of the Unitarian Universalist Ministers Association. Now, at the time, the Ministers Association was reinventing itself to become a more serious and substantive organization. And at the center of this was a new vision to become really a skilled deliverer of continuing education for UU ministers. I was aware of all this and applauded the effort, and I embraced the idea of paying more in dues, and that's about all I expected to have to do to make that happen. So the Ministers Association president reviewed these plans with me, and then he noted that the continuing education piece would only work if the committee overseeing the program, it's called the Center Committee, was staffed by ministers not only skilled in this kind of work, but also widely respected by their colleagues. So he wondered if I would be willing to serve on it. Flattery gets you somewhere. Absolutely not. I immediately thought to myself, I need another commitment like a hole in the head. But actually, the president's flattery got me a little somewhere, so I didn't pipe in right away with a firm no, but then I got ready. Yes, I'd be happy to do that even though I don't have time. I realize this is important, and I think I could maybe do a good job. What? Why did I say yes? Serving on Center, I knew, would involve a lot of mundane and even tedious work. Duty, as Ogden Nash pointed out, has the misfortune of not always being very attractive. So why did I say yes? Well, in a word, yes, it is duty that compelled me to say yes. I feel a sense of duty to my colleagues and to this Unitarian Universalist movement. Ministers inspired and instructed by excellent continuing education would be good for congregations, good for our faith. And man, does our world need our faith. So where does this sense of duty come from? For me, it probably starts with some hard wiring and some nurturing. My parents both tried to instill that sense. I also embraced the idea of duty to colleagues early on in my career. One of my role models in ministry has been the late Reverend Rupert Lovely. Rupert helped our fellowship's search committee and I in our courtship dance in 1990. He talked a lot about duty to colleagues. Even late in his career, when some ministers are really backing off, doing stuff for the UU Ministers Association, he kept on serving. And I remember one time he said, "I really don't like what I'm doing, but I'm going to do it because that's my duty." Rupert talked a lot about the golden rule of collegiality among UU ministers, which is if someone asks you to do something, another colleague, you say yes, unless you just really, really, really can't do it. And also, you don't ask another colleague to do something lightly. You give it a lot of thought before you ask. Well, Rupert embodied this golden rule. So maybe it was my internalized Rupert Lovely that caused me to say yes instead of no. Whatever it was, though, I jumped into the work with heart and soul. Well, as a lot of you know, I'm just back from the final major event of my 4-year term on Center. This week, 450 colleagues from around North America and even a little beyond gathered at a hotel in St. Pete Beach, Florida. Yeah. 80 degrees warmer, Florida. And this was our second Institute for Excellence in Ministry. And I was the co-chair of this one. I'm going to brag for a minute. It was a stunning success, if I might say so myself. We offered 8 seminars that had 15 hours of instruction. Our morning worship and our evening vespers services were the most moving and amazing services I've ever been part of. Every service left me in a puddle of tears and with a clearer sense of what I, as a minister and as a person, am called to do. So we sent her folks wore hats so that people could ask us questions. And we couldn't go anywhere without ministers we don't even know pulling us aside to say, thank you. I'm so grateful. Thank you. Thank you. Serving on center is without a doubt the most rewarding thing I've done in my ministry besides things here. And while I can't take all the credit for this year's Institute's success, we had a great committee and really amazing staff, just being a small part of it fills me with fulfillment and joy. And who knows the impact of this that will ripple through maybe 450 congregations in the UU Association. So, fulfilling your duty, it's a good thing. There we go. That's the moral of the story, right? But now, picture an older couple. They've been together for decades. One partner is in relatively good health. The other suffers from Alzheimer's. The healthier one feels a keen sense of duty to help keep the ill house spouse at home at all costs. And the stress for caring for someone with such profound chronic needs in the end takes an enormous toll, and the partner's health collapses too. Even though caring for a partner during an illness is part of what it means to be in a committed relationship, sometimes the caregiving role can become the sole reality in the relationship. A caregiver in this situation might even discover that he or she has stopped being a spouse and has become really little more than a full-time caregiver. Perhaps when all is said and done, the partner with Alzheimer's would have been received better care at a facility that catered to the needs of residents with dementia. Perhaps moving the partner to a facility would have preserved and restored the healthier partner's role as a spouse. So, was the healthier partner's fidelity to duty a good thing? It might have been noble, but arguably it resulted in a lower level of care and certainly exacted an enormous cost on the partner. So maybe it's a matter of interpreting how best to fulfill our duty. Perhaps in this case, duty to the partner's well-being and to maintaining one's own health would have been better served by moving the beloved to a care facility, assuming, and this is a huge assumption, that they had the money to do that. Staying with the family theme for a minute, picture now a parent and a child who is an adult and is a drug addict. Drug dealers are coming to get a payment from your kid. The kid doesn't have it. And this has happened off and on for years. You've given your kid money before to save your kid from being hurt or killed by a dealer. But doing so, you realize you've also enabled the addiction to continue. What do you do? What's your duty to your kid? Maybe it's also a matter of figuring out correctly what the appropriate object of your sense of duty should be. Picture Robert E. Lee in the Civil War and choosing to uphold his duty to his state and to this institution of slavery, rather than duty to his nation and to freedom. He made the wrong choice. Or how about the soldier who remains faithful to the chain of command, but in so doing follows an order which is unethical or even a war crime? Or the person working for a company who knowingly follows unethical directives from above? Is devotion to duty always a good thing? To what should we be faithful? My dictionary defines duty as the binding or obligatory force of something that is morally or legally right. What happens when morally right and legally right are two different things? This is the dilemma faced by draftees during the Vietnam War who determine in their own consciences that serving would violate a moral law. Toward what should we feel duty bound? Here's another example. I heard a story this week about a guy in Arizona who served 38 years in prison for a crime he did not commit. Another man admitted the crime in a confidential conversation with a lawyer. The lawyer was bound by professional duty not to share the contents of that conversation, even after the guilty party died. The lawyer felt a sense to do a call to do justice, and he helped steer the case to the Arizona Justice Project, but it took them 10 years because they could not use his hearing this admission of guilt. What was the dutiful thing for this lawyer to do? So duty. Duty is an ambiguous concept. This is why we wanted to pair Wordsworth's Ode to Duty and Ogden Nash's kind of an ode to duty. Duty is a slippery thing. I think it's a value worth upholding, but figuring out how and when and what it looks like, really tricky. In another poem called Portrait of the Artist as a Prematurely Old Man, yes, Ogden Nash again, he writes about something that guides him in figuring out how to live out his duty. I think this guy had a duty issue, I'll say. So, he judges sins of omission, failing to do what he should have done, as worse than doing something that you oughtn't to have done. Partly this is because, in his view, sins of commission at least have the chance of being fun. You didn't slap the lads in the tavern on the back and loudly cry, "We! Let's all fail to write just one more letter before we go home, and this round of unwritten letters is on me." No, you never get any fun out of the things you haven't done. As usual, Nash writes with his tongue firmly embedded in his cheek, but there is some truth in this. Often I think that the worst failures of duty are those times when we are silent, when we don't act in the face of injustice. These failures to fulfill our duty are the ones that can really eat away at our soul. Whites in the Jim Crow South, sitting in the front of the bus and eating at the white-only lunch counters and sending their kids to the better whites-only schools, silent about this privilege. Germans quietly going about their business, even as they knew innocent Jews and gypsies and gays and political prisoners were being gassed in their town. These are dramatic symbols of the sin of omission. So, maybe in a different way from Nash, I would say attentiveness to avoiding these sins is really important in the spiritual journey. And the only other spiritual advice I can give for figuring out our duty is to try our very best to engage our minds and our hearts with this question of how do we fulfill our duty. Discernment, I think, always has to have a head component. And the more complex and the more ambiguous the question, the more we need to use our minds, these gifts we have, to analyze the situation and to figure out what best to do. But heart is important too. Maybe the best guide of all is to determine whether we'll have our heart in fulfilling the duty. Will your heart be in it? That's the reason I said yes to serving on the center committee, because I knew my heart would be in this work, because I give my heart to Unitarian Universalism. When Olympia Brown preached her last sermon at the Universalist Church in Racine at the age of 85, she exhorted the members of the Racine Church to keep giving their hearts to this faith. "Stand by this faith," she said. "Work for it and sacrifice for it. There is nothing in all the world so important as to be loyal to this faith, which has placed before us the loftiest ideals, which has comforted us in sorrow, strengthened us for noble duty, and made the world beautiful." This is how I feel about Unitarian Universalism. I look out at the world, and I see people who are not allowed to be who they truly are, who are not allowed to fulfill their destiny simply because of the color of their skin, or their class, or their gender, or their sexual orientation and identity, or their religion. I see African American boys growing up with prison being a greater likelihood in their lives than college. I see teens who identify as LGBTQ feeling such deep and pervasive rejection from the world around them that it leads them to contemplate suicide. My heart gets broken over and over and over. And I'm convinced that this faith is part of the answer to stopping this from happening. Our faith, with its affirmation of the inherent dignity and worth of all people as its central focus, our faith can change the world. It can stop some lives from being broken. It can stop my heart from having to break so often. So I give my heart to this faith. I fulfill my duty to Unitarian Universalism with love and joy because this faith makes a difference. I fulfill my duty with heart. This is why I do the work I do. This is why I support the fellowship with time and money. It's why I try to make our affirmation of the dignity and worth of all people the consistent true north of my moral compass. One last thought. Trying to figure out how to fulfill our duty is never easy. I know I have made all sorts of mistakes with this. We all do. Sometimes with a good heart, we misinterpret or misread how to fulfill our duty. Sometimes I'm asleep at the switch, in spite of my best efforts to be attentive. I try not to judge my own failures too harshly, and I try really hard not to judge other people's failures of duty harshly. How can I judge someone who's trying to figure out how to care for a partner with Alzheimer's, or a kid who's addicted to drugs? All I can try to do is learn from my mistakes and do my very best the next time. It's all I can do. It's all any of us can do. And man, it has got to be good enough.